Yo, check us out. Chuck D, Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yellow from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DOC, the Diggy Diggy motherfucking Doc.
Yo, what's up? This is your boy, Z-Man.
What up, dog? This is E-Shot.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
It's your boy, DJ Paul KOL from 36 Block.
Young Busy Bone.
Vice Warp.
This your man, Mastermind of Hellraiser.
Yo, this is DJ Ready Red.
What up? This is the real Rick Ross, and you're listening to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
We're trying to get there. Tonight we got a guest who he needs no introduction, but we're going to give him one anyway. I wanted to interview him for a long time because I reviewed a lot of the releases off his label, The Murder Dog. You know what I'm saying? Also, you know what I'm saying, he's from Chicago. You know, that's you know, where my family was from, you know, in and around Chicago and, you know, where I was born and raised. So this is a special show for me. I'm going to bring on the one and only Sleepy Wicked of Wicked Entertainment. What's up, Sleepy Wicked? How you doing, brother?
All right. How you doing, Prev? Thanks for having me on.
Man, long overdue. I'm so happy to be able to do this because your story definitely needs to be told. And, you know, you started a long time ago, man, putting out classic hip-hop records in the city of Chicago. Then let's take them all the way back. You know, what made you start up Wicked Entertainment? And, you know what I'm saying, how did you get involved in the hip-hop scene in Chicago?
Well, you know, it basically was about, this is our 30-year anniversary, as a matter of fact.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You know, in 1993, you know, me and my partner Sinbad, we were looking to do other business that was, you know, that we knew about and we wanted to be involved in. And we looked at the guys like Eazy-E and Lil J, and we wanted to get into this genre that we knew was filled with talent in Chicago, you know. So, you know, we started by researching. We got books. We started reading. We went to classes. We actually took a class of how to run and operate a record label, and it was put up in Chicago by these guys from another record label called Solar Sounds of Los Angeles Records, Solar. They also started Death Row with them guys in the beginning. And then, you know what I'm saying? And then so they, you know, actually helped us start by even giving us money. You know, at the same time they were doing that, starting Death Row, they were seeding other companies throughout the country just to help them, you know, building this business. So they ended up hiring us, to believe it or not, to promote two of their artists, right? And they gave us the seed money, which was $1,500, which we started a company with our first release, you know, and basically we were promoting The funny thing is that it goes on with the legend that we were promoting an artist named Chocolate and another artist named A.M. Dre in the Chicago market. And Chocolate just happened to be the guy that Suge Knight went to go to Vanilla Ice's place, because Chocolate wrote a bunch of that Vanilla Ice's song, Ice Ice Baby. So,
wow.
It's crazy that we found out and it was all related, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, we used to promote, that's how we started. We promoted their package, you know, their product in Chicago, you know.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing, because Death Row, as we know, is one of the biggest labels and the most controversial labels of all time. Now, you talking about, were you talking about Harry O, one of the guys that was backing the label?
No, I'm talking about Dick Griffey and Jay King.
Okay.
They started, and they were doing their studio. The Death Row was recording and started in their studio, in their offices. They're a classic, you know, they put out so many classic records back in the days. But if you look even in the documentaries that they had out, you'll see them in there where it says Solo by Sound of Los Angeles Records. They were the guys that were, like basically putting on the classes that we went to and teaching us, you know, what steps we have to take in order to actually be legit and not just have a name as a record label. You know, we wanted to be established legitimately, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, me and Sinbad, my partner Sinbad, we never, you know, we don't rap, you know, we don't produce, you know. So we had to go look for artists, you know, and try to figure some, you know, who we wanted to start with, you know what I'm saying?
You guys were the visionaries, putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've seen that Chicago was being missed in the landscape and in the conversation. And, you know, we had to be, find a way to put it out there.
And, you know, 93, you know, was a hell of a year in hip hop in general, you know what I'm saying? But there was a lot of artists in Chicago doing the thing. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, eventually you connected with EC Hilla. You know what I'm saying? And that dude is, to me, I think he influenced people like Eminem. You know, because you had the Slim Shady LP, the Marshall Mathers LP, but in Chicago you had the EC Illa Live from the Ill EP, the EC Illa LP, long before that. Is that a fair assumption to make?
No, that's actually a fact, because Eminem used to look up to EC and us. We used to know him, and we used to, his manager was real close with us. Yeah, his manager was real close with us, Mark. From out in Mark Kemp from Detroit. He used to have a magazine. It was called, I forgot the name of his magazine, but he started managing him, and then we were helping him promote in Chicago as well, just like we promote artists. People want it sometimes, and sometimes we do another love. But he said, so we used to promote Eminem before, and this is before he met Wendy Day, Dr. Dre, all of them. So, you know, and even there was a point where Eminem wanted to do a group with EC called the Four Horsemen, something like that, Four Horsemen, and it was going to be him, Eminem, EC, and then I think one of the guys that were from his crew, I forgot his name, and basically, I mean, at the time, EC was like, nah, he kind of turned it down. He was just like, nah, you know, because he was on his own things, and EC was, you know, he was out, you know, building his name up there, you know, and it was at a time when we, you know, we got our video played on BET, The Box, you know, and we started getting a lot of attention. So that sounds like something that some people don't know. Yeah, exactly. But that's something that these things happen, you know, we, you know, over a year, 2 years of time. But those things with Eminem, you know, he was there, you know, looking up EC. Okay? And that's probably why his albums are called the Shady LP and all stuff like that, because of the influence that we put out.
Yeah, I always thought that too. You know, you could definitely see it. And plus, the lyrical aspect of it too. I mean, Eminem is one of the most potent lyricists of all time, but so is EC Illa. You know, so yeah. That, yeah,
And there was a time when we went to Scribble Jam, and EC was the headliner. And that was the same Scribble Jam that Eminem was battling Juice and Ryan Fest and stuff like that. And as a matter of fact, I brought Ryan Fest there for that whole battle and stuff like that. But that was the time.
That's when Juice won.
I do remember.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And I remember all day, you know, I just remember hearing Eminem's voice all day long because I was running the booth at the time. And I just like, man, I've been hearing him all day long on the microphone, you know. And I was like, man, I was kind of getting tired and stuff. I was like, man, you know, but he was just killing it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He was killing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. This
and me
real
and my guys, we always liked him and stuff like that. Yeah, me and my guys, yeah. Always liked him. Other people kind of thought they were like, you know, be competitive, you know. But I always liked him. I seen that, you know, he had a lot of talent. And he had that special something that you have to have, that certain magic that, you know, artists have to have to really pop hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I know he was doing stuff with Champ Town at that time. He was trying his best to get on and then finally eventually caught the attention of Dre. But, you know, you guys, man, you guys are at the epicenter of everything, you know. This is such a great time in hip-hop, and here you are, you know what I'm saying, putting out all this product and making these connections and stuff. Man, you got to be missing those days compared to now, I would imagine.
Because
nowadays
it's
so
man,
different.
Because we had a nice movement going, and it was all love all over the place. You know, everywhere we went, throughout the country, throughout the city, everywhere, it was just, you know, love and, you know, support, and we were just building. And sometimes, you know, it takes a lot of different work to build an artist in a career, and it doesn't happen overnight, you know. But if we had the same resources that they have now, like digital reach and YouTube, and, you know, we can reach people, millions of people in one day if we want to.
Yeah.
If we had these resources in that era, you know, we would be so, so far ahead, you know, because there was a time where we had our video all of a sudden got picked to play in a rotation on BET, and we weren't prepared with our product available everywhere for people to buy. So there was a, you know, big disconnect where people wanted our product, but we couldn't get it to the market, to all different stores at the time they wanted it. Whereas right now, you want it, you get it right now, immediately, you know, and you don't lose out on the sales.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Back then, you know, a lot of hand over fist. I mean, and we had mom and pop shops everywhere, you know. Nowadays, they're a rarity.
Gatekeepers.
You know.
Distributors that didn't want to carry you, you know, all that type of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a hell of a market, the Midwest. I mean, you know, it was just so much talent, you know, to the point of when labels started to recognize Chicago, they didn't know where to go, probably. Like, who do we go to first, you know? There's so much.
Mm-hmm.
But you, you were always doing your thing independently and hustling and making noise all across the globe. You caught the attention of Bob Dole. You got to tell me this story. What happened with old man Bob Dole?
Well, yeah. So being that he was in the media for this, rap lyrics and putting the parental advisory sticker and all this other stuff about trying to ban bad words and rap, it was at that time period. And, you know, at that time we had an ad probably in the Source magazine, and he was probably going through his magazine and calling. We had a number there that was a hotline. We call it the Ill for Life hotline, just for people to connect with us. Before websites, we had like a voicemail, so people can call, leave their address, and we would mail them stuff so they can get on their fan list, you know. So that's how we collected the people from all over the place. So they will call and we'll connect with different various producers will call us, and a lot of people randomly will call us, even there they were, you know, in the game, and they were just working on the way up, producers and stuff like that. But anyway, so he decided, I guess he called us, I mean, out of that magazine ad, and was like, I need you to send me every one of your CDs to us, so-and-so, Washington, D.C., whatever, so, you know. And I call him back. He's like, what is this about? He's like, yeah, I want to see all these, you know, words and the lyrics and whatever type of stuff. And mail it to this stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, buddy. And that was the last year because, you know, we didn't want to really play into all of that. You know what I'm saying? But they were looking for, you know, for something. And we didn't really want to get it. At that time, they were doing stuff like banning, you know, trying to ban Tupac and crushing CDs and, you know, all these types of things. And we're just trying to come, you know, we're trying to run a legitimate business, you know, with this real distributors and getting our stuff into music lands and coconuts and stuff like that. We didn't want to have the government to try to block our business, you know.
They're using it for all kinds of different things to set people up and, you know, like they did with SIBO, what was it, Deadly Game off of Till My Casket Drops. That was like the first song where they incriminated somebody, you know, which is crazy. Yeah, Dole, Quayle, like you said, Tupac had to deal with him, C. Dolores Tucker, Dionne Warwick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember seeing, for those of you Detroit hip-hop fans out there, I remember seeing Dionne Warwick talking about Esham's Kill the Fetus album. You know, to me it was funny. You know, I felt bad for Esham because, you know, he's a creative artist, you know, that shouldn't have to be hassled by people like that. But that's how it was back then. And now today, fast forward, they're banning all these books and all these different things. Shit like The Outsiders, you know, shit we read in high school, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, shit that they shouldn't even touch. You know, it's just like, man, get over that because those people never win, you know. They never win.
Yeah, but, and they can't stop it. It doesn't matter what they ban, and nothing's going to stop.
No, man. We got the internet. I mean, shit is everywhere, accessible, you know, everything. Now, let's go back again to EC, man. He recently put out a very dope book, Fat Laces and Throwing Stars, you know, which was a limited edition book and talks about his life and everything. And when did you and him connect? And what was he like when you, what were your first impressions of him?
Well, you know, basically, when me and Sinbad first starting the record label, we were chasing a group that we really liked. And that group was called D to the S, dedicated to the streets, the legendary trackster in K-Tone. We really liked them. We just heard them on a mixtape, Cash Money Brothers mixtape, and we heard them on the radio playing, and we were just chasing them. We found out they were going to be somewhere, and we went there to this place, and there was an artist, I guess at the time he was the dude who did Pickle Grip Pump on my lap at all times. I think it was from the Bay Area. Popular song, so he was showing up there. Pickle Grip Pump on my lap at all times.
I know what you're talking about. I can't think of the name. Sin might know.
Well, we can Google it. Yeah, later. Well, anyway, so we went there. Each of us was performing, so we went there to try to get in contact with them. Say, hey, well, you know, see if we can do something together. You know what I'm saying? And then basically they performed, and SEC performed there too. Really didn't notice him too much. I just noticed, you know, this dude, whatever that was there. But then later on, one of my close friends said, hey, you should connect with Reggie because, you know, you remember Reggie? I was like, who are you talking about? He's like, yeah, Reggie, we went to school with him. So basically, you know, we went to grammar school together. And I didn't put two and two together, you know, that was him there. You know what I'm saying? So basically it was EC. So we basically connected off of our old friendship because we were friends before in grammar school, you know what I'm saying? And then we connected even afterwards, like just some other stuff, you know, once in a while we'd connect and hook up and go to a party or whatever, like, you know, stuff like that. One time I even bought some Vans off of him. He remembers that part where I came all the way to his house in a scooter to buy some Vans from him that he was selling. But these were the shoes back in the days that were kind of popular, and now they're popular again. Now 30 years later, but yeah, it just so happened that we went to school together and stuff. We knew each other already, so when we connected, he showed us a couple things that he was doing, a couple things that he had put a record out with this other, like, radio jock, and basically a couple songs that he had ideas for. So we, you know, we connected and we liked it. Me and Sinbad said, let's go, you know. And we started putting out the Live from the Ill EP and recording it, finishing all the songs, you know, mixing it, mastering it, you know, stuff like that. Artwork, getting the designer, Slang, graphic artist to put the cover. And then, you know, back in the days, you didn't have, like, Photoshop and stuff like that back in the day. I had to go to Kinko's and cut. Jake?
Yeah, Sleepy, you there, brother?
I'm here.
Yes. Yeah, you're cutting out a little bit the last about 10 seconds or so. You was talking about they didn't have, like, a Photoshop.
Yeah, so they didn't have Photoshop and stuff, so I literally had to cut and paste all the artwork for, you know, J-Cards.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying? Like, literally with a razor blade in the Kinko's, you know, and, you know, shrink it down in the copy machine and then make it the right size and then glue it to the J-Card section and then, you know, put the layout together and then make copies of that. And so literally because there was no Photoshop, like I said, in those days. And literally had to figure it out from the start. And that was our first release, was a cassette of Live from the Ill. And then some 12 inches that we put out. So, I mean,
wow.
Basically, like, we had to do that to build it up from the start. You know, like, we started with cassettes. With that $1,500 they gave us from, you know, Solar, we built it up. We started our first order of cassettes and vinyl. And then we sold those and bought more cassettes, and then we bought CDs, and then we sold those, and we kept reinvesting all the money. We didn't even take any money. We just kept putting it in there just to build it up, you know, back into to get to, you know, to build the business up. So,
yeah.
Like I said, we, you know, it all came together like I believe it was supposed to come together. It just came so perfectly, you know, because we already knew each other, you know.
Yeah. That's always a positive when you already know somebody, you know what I'm saying? You already got that relationship established. But you guys and EC, you guys dropped a lot of stuff together over the years, you know. But do you still keep in touch with him today?
I don't talk to him that much. You know, I talked to him a few years ago, and I haven't really talked to him that much. He's not really that active. And he doesn't go in places that I go, you know. I don't think he doesn't go events and doesn't do things like that. So I talked to him about, you know, relaunching and doing some other things and other albums and stuff, and he really didn't want to do it. So, you know, I just kept him moving on other stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, he definitely, you know, it's always good when he pops up with something, you know. I've told him over the years, man, I wish he'd keep going because he's such a talented artist. And definitely
He was always ahead of his time. That's what I always tell people, he was ahead of his time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know,
well, you guys as a label were, too. You know, you were really doing stuff for the city of Chicago, you know, at a time when there wasn't really many outlets at all. You know, you know, you guys really helped jumpstart that. I don't believe there would have been that big, you know, takeover in 96, you know, if it wasn't for labels like yourself putting in that work and helping getting the city recognized, you know. What about, like, J.D. Walker? He's a super talented artist, too. He came out in the early 90s.
Yep.
Did you, like, Slipping Away and stuff with Seal the Bad Black, did you guys ever... you know, think about working with him back then? Or?
Well, yeah. I mean, we connected with him later on in the years, and we got real close and stuff. At the time, he was doing a lot of big things, and we were trying to get him on a compilation, one of the compilations we were doing, and we were successful. And I think he had some obligations, or he was doing something with some other companies, something like that. He was probably too busy, or I don't know what the situation was. It was such a long time ago. But I always wanted him to be on our Wicked Streets of Shy compilations, you know?
Yeah, classics. I had the pleasure of reviewing some of those, man. Those are just amazing compilations that came out. We're going to go to a song here in a little bit, and then we're going to come back and chop it up with you. Wicked Streets of Shy by Triple Darkness. When you did that, of all the artists in Chicago, including, you know, EC himself and others, did they come up with that song, or did you tell them, hey, I want you guys to do this Wicked Streets of Shy?
Well, we told them to do it because we were, that we already had the name of the compilation and what we were doing, and we said we wanted you to be the theme of the compilation, the song. So, you know, put it together, you know, around this theme, you know, around this, in this name, this name, title and stuff like that. And then from there, you know, I had K-Tone produce about 5 or 6 tracks, you know. And so I put them in the studio together to put together their songs, the Nuisance song, and a couple other ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is classic stuff right here. We're going to play this song, then I'm going to bring on the homie Sin from France. I know he's got some questions. He likes to dig into the vault a little bit, ask about songs and albums. Then after that, I want to give you the floor so you can tell everybody what's going on today with yourself and Wicked Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So don't go nowhere, everybody. We'll be right back with Sleepy Wicked of Wicked Entertainment. Chi-Town.
You pull a knife, you pull a gun. You send one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago.
Domain with the cocaine and the things remain in your brain and the gang's bang. I'm a black thing playing with blows and rocks, this thing can't change things. So fuck it, I say bitch, don't be no sight. That's wicked streets I've been through, got me strapped with the events. You corrupted by the influentials, love them sick individuals. So hate in the mix of my mental, fuck you and all you can't do. Deep into my windows, you see that my soul's cold. Here just freeze the whole globe, never to testify with my soul.
I'm still sipping on this old gold. Me and my niggas got the set sold. Paper chasing, so they pay as we play and remain cold. And it's your show.
To get up out these motherfucking streets, man. Man, direct, hang on. Gotta get up out these motherfucking streets, man. You know what I'm talking about? This here ain't nowhere. Nowhere. You know what I'm talking about? Man, straight jack.
My city streets is so wicked, you can't even kick it if you ain't plugged, nigga. Motherfuck who you is, you kept in the slug if you ain't plugged, nigga. It ain't no love, it's a blood loss. If the thug caught on the wrong deck, the brothers gon' tear him. I'll beat him down like he stole some, pop him like he told some. But that won't be the reason you're bleeding and we done swole some. I roll some to keep my mind at ease and off with the shadiness that the streets has got to offer in Chicago. Cause I know all the sneaky tricks of the trade, fatal mistakes that I made, never paid, but in a way it cost me dearly. Homies and all, seen them all fall, before they even got their chance to ball, they got their call, and it makes me wonder why, and when, will I die in these wicked streets to shy, executed by my own guy. The shit I've seen, you'll be surprised, but you got to see it with your own eyes.
Gotta do what you can to get by, from paper, take the mistake, and get to make it. Every day, but I don't get caught by
been tipping. Paper chasing and money laundering. Coppers can't even pipe us. Haters don't even like us. We all demons. Hyper to strike it like we vipers. You itching a thin cake. My itchy gon' share hate. Nigga, nose clean. Fuck all the footage the feds take. Got rid of the dead weight. My homies, they red fake. My head aches. Partly from the pressure the head takes. My inner presence won't cope. So I still it blow dope. Flipping the pack, the stack. Stacking magnets to dead folks. I dead joke when it comes to reality of my love. Reality of a slug brings respect to the dub. Saying plug, take the continent to wide. But your main catch us getting live. And I wish the streets to die.
Gotta do what you can to get by. From paper, taking the stake in cases of making plans to get high. From cracking the rules, I'm packing the blues. And all of these fools that might try to decide they're gonna take my life. They don't die. In these wicked streets to die. Gotta do what you can to get by. From paper, taking the stake in cases of making plans to get high. From cracking the rules, I'm packing the blues. And all of these fools that might try to decide they're gonna take my life. They don't die. They don't die.
Say Jack, triple dog. Put it down with wicked, you know what I'm talking about? These wicked motherfucking streets you shy. You ain't careful, nigga. You take your last motherfucking steps in it.
Can't get by.
You know what I'm talking about?
Y'all, y'all. I'm cracking them blues, I'm packing them tools, and
fucking
fools that might
we
die.
Have bust down
come and take my life, they gon' die.
You know what I'm talking about?
Classic, classic right there. Wicked Streets is Shy. You know what I'm saying? We got Sleepy, Wicked, Wicked Entertainment. Man, a lot of history tonight, man. I really appreciate that. You know, we're going to bring on the homie DJ Lord Sinister from France, the French Connection. He's got a few questions for you. Sam, you there, brother?
What up, Sam?
Yes, hi. Hi, Sleepy Wicked, how it's called. Yeah, French Connection. Can you tell us about the first release of ECRA in Life on the Hill in 94 you released from the label?
Yes, sir. The first video? What do you say? The first album?
Yeah, the album in 94.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, the Life on the Hill EP, that was our very first release to be put out of ECRA. And it was a EP short album, and while we were going towards working on the next project, which is a full album, which is the Ill LP. So the Life from the Ill EP, it was about five songs and intros and outros. And, you know, it was part of establishing the groundwork of an artist, you know, and getting them out there. Because all he had before that was like a 12-inch record that barely went anywhere other than specialty vinyl stores. And we wanted to establish his name in the record stores, the, you know, mainstream stores. Because he was just on college radio. They would play songs here and there on record. And maybe Gramophone Records and some other places had it for sale. You know, they didn't really want to do a real release and really put it out there or market it or offer it for sale, you know, wholesale. It was just like kind of like a hobby thing they were doing.
Yeah. Okay, right. And can you tell us about the release of Triple Darkness, a cold-blooded EP in 1999? It was a classic too, from the Wicked Entertainment.
Yeah, so Triple Darkness, you know, they are one of my favorite groups, underrated groups from Chicago. And they right. have, when I hear their music, they have this energy and this vibe that certain artists have that you can feel inside your heart. That's why I try to explain that you can feel it inside your heart. And they have that something special, and I've always noticed that. And, you know, we try to take them and bring them out nationally because they were very popular locally. So we put their project together, put it out through distributors. I got into Best Buy. We used to have it even had it in the end caps. Would hate to have it on these shelves on the side to make sure everybody's seen it. And I knew that once it's out there that people would pick it up, and it needed to get out there, you know. And it caught a big following out in California, throughout the Bay Area. Definitely had a lot of support from Murdog Magazine. But making it available through these chain stores, Musicland, Damn Goodies, Transworld Coconuts, and Record Town. These places, we had to make sure we were there with the other guys. We didn't just want to be in your local store. So I wanted to bring them national. And that's where we connected with them and, you know, put them on the compilations, but also put out the projects that they had out locally. But we put it out nationally.
And for the Wicked Street of Key, first episode, your buttons are about the real underground Chicago, like Psychodrama, Los Peruanos, of course, ECE, La Legendary Tractor. And a lot of them was very underrated at that time. And outside of Naughty Dog, nobody talked about them. So can you tell us about this compilation? Yes, also.
Yeah, so the Wicked Streets of Shy, the first episode, we went in there and basically recorded all new songs from the artists that were specific to the compilation. And with the we coinciding with that release, at the same time, we also released the Wicked Streets of Shy, the classics, which we licensed other songs that were already out and put them all together in one place. And so the first episode, we wanted to showcase all these artists that were making noise throughout the Chicago region. And we knew our mission was to push Chicago artists throughout the country and the world. And that was the way for us to do it and help them build their name, and they can build their own projects on their own labels. And we had our aspect of pushing them through our channels and get their word out there. So every time we were doing things that were corresponding with other artists or that we work with, we were pushing all different artists just to push the culture forward, you know, and the Chicago artists that needed exposure, all the way down to making our own TV show, you know, because we used to actually promote a lot on the box. We happen to make a good friend with the program director of The Box, which was music television, You Control. And he would give us like 20 cities at one time that he would put our video available on. And then we would have to go and order it 10 times a day in every city for like $250 it would cost for every time you order it. So we would order it 10 times a day in every city, burning up all our phone bills, all different phone lines, you know, just to make sure that it was seen on there. So after MTV bought The Box and shut them down because they were giving too much power to independent companies like ourselves, like Master P, like Luke, it was too much power to be able to order your own video and let it be seen all day long in these markets that everybody was watching, because The Box was so popular, people only kept that on and nothing else. And they didn't have to pay no money because the video was just show, because somebody paid for it. It was like a jukebox for videos. So once MTV bought them and shut them down so that we couldn't have any type of power, we started making our own shows and own TV shows, hour-long shows that showcased all the videos that the Chicago artists were putting out. And that was called Wicked TV. It was on Channel 25, Comcast. We had reached about 1.2 million homes. But this is what we had to do, because we had to fight against the system and we couldn't get our music out there to be seen. So, you know, that was our mission, was to make sure that Chicago was pushed out there to as much as we can with whatever resources we could. Even if we had nothing, we still went out there. We even put posters up everywhere without any regard for nothing. We just, you know, we went out there hard and did street marketing, guerrilla marketing, all that.
Yeah, like I said, it was in the source and everything. You know, you guys, you know, really got the word out there. You know, I remember 95, I think it was the ECL LP was in the source. And that same year, down in Memphis, 3-6 Mafia put Mystic Styles in the source, too. I was surprised to see both of them. You know, I was like, wow, that's dope. You know.
Well, you know what, really, we were in the same page across from each other. We were right across from each other at the same time. Yeah. And some of the things that we had to do, we had to do differently, because sometimes we had to take an ad and we'd say, how do we make our ad be seen amongst all these other ads. So we said, okay, we'll do something like this. We'll do our ads sideways so that everybody will be passing through the magazine and they're looking at this ad and say, wait a minute, this ad is sideways. Let me go look at this ad. And all of, you know, it brought us a lot of attention. And then we would, another thing we would do, because Source was kind of expensive in those days, is that we would split an ad with the other artists, like D to the S, I forgot, a couple other artists. We would just get an ad, let's say a half a page, and then we would just split it two ways or three ways. You know what I'm saying? Just to make it, you know, more affordable for us and just to stick out, you know, and promote more.
Yeah, that's a hell of an idea right there, especially at that time when things cost so much money. You know, people don't understand how hard it was to run a record label at that time, because you're talking about studio, you're talking about promotions, paying people to go put posters and stickers everywhere. I mean, so much went into it, whereas now, like you said earlier, you have access to everything, you know, at your fingertips on the computer. You know, you didn't have that back then.
Exactly. And these days, I think I still see people putting out projects and they're not spending any money to market the projects, and they're getting a little bit lazy with social media.
They're depending on shares, and you know their homies to share their shit for them. But as many of you will see, that doesn't always happen. You know, not to the extent of you making money. Yeah, 100%.
Exactly. So I was talking to a friend today, and I said, "How are you going to put a project? You didn't spend all this time to put together a project and the videos and different clips, and you're not going to spend money to make sure as many people can see it as they can."
Yeah.
You know, you have to.
Yeah.
You can't.
Also,
go ahead.
Outside of Chicago, you put out Midwest Muscle Stars in 2001, and you put on the map groups like Brigida, CCA, and of course you got Psychodrama and some Small Ballads. But can you tell us about this competition to the Midwest side?
Yeah, so you know, with Wicked Street and Shy, that was mainly Chicago artist focused. Midwest Mobsters was for the whole Midwest. We're trying to showcase the talents of Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois, you know, the whole Midwest, and build that, you know, compilation up. And we did that in partnership with another mixtape that was very popular called Straight Up Gangsta Shit. And they had many volumes of mixtapes out, you know. So we did a legit mixtape with them. And that was one of the first legit mixtapes with, you know, they were licensed or all original songs made into a mixtape, you know, and put it into the Spies and put it into Music Lands and made it available, you know, nationwide through, you know, web sales. We had commercials on BET and Rap City and all these different places to promote it, you know. And we knew, I mean, Rick Gillo was such a great talent. He had such a good vibe in music, you know. So we had many artists like them that we needed to, you know, wanted to work with and get their word out there. Now with them, we ended up releasing about six different compilations on that. And I currently do have them up on the digital streaming services. And we only have, I don't think we have too many physical copies right now of those. But basically, that was a legit mixtape that we built off of the Straight Up Gangsta Shit name. You know, and Psychodrama was such a big, powerful artist in the region and the country itself. But they had such a big following, you know. And Psychodrama was signed to Suave House at the time. And Suave House, I don't know what they were doing, but they weren't releasing their projects like everybody really wanted them to be released. So they would be doing different songs here and there and features and stuff like that. And those guys have so much immense talent, you know. I love them with all my heart.
Yeah. They're another very slept on group. And you mentioned to go back a little bit, the straight up gangster shit. That's how I discovered stuff like Fifth Four Boys. You know what I'm saying? Because they didn't just put, you know, Chicago or whatever on it. I mean, you had like Easy, Scarface, DMG. They mixed a lot of rap from around the country. Do you think Chicago?
Yeah.
Well, I definitely. I mean, this is kind of a dumb question because we know the answer, but Chicago is probably the main market in hip-hop because everything comes through Chicago from the east to the west, the south. And really, I think, you know, Chicago helped make or break a lot of records in other parts of the countries too, you know?
Yeah, no, this is a fact. This is a fact because WGCI is the number one radio station in the whole country, okay? Number one in the whole country, WGCI was. And the Midwest market was the biggest market for consuming the music. So the companies used to tell us that we do not want to be pushing Chicago artists. We want Chicago to be consuming our artists. So we just want you guys to be consumers. You know, they would tell us this. You know? And we were like, no. We have a whole new, we have a whole audience out here. And we don't necessarily want to be saying New York, New York, and L.A., L.A. We have our own style. We have our own language. A lot of these sayings that you hear now in music, in the culture of hip-hop, started 30 years ago in Chicago culture.
Yeah.
All these things are that you hear so many things like I'm a mama, bust downs, so many different slang. They're out here are 30 years old. They're just getting into mainstream culture. So we know we wanted to aspect that, you know. And then not only that, there was, you know, so many different, you know, nationalities in music. So there was Latin hip hop. There was, you know, not just, you know, regular hip hop. It was gangster rap. It was, you know, backpack rap. It was all different type of stuff. So when we get into Latin rap with Los Marihuanos, you know, that really took us to a whole other level too, because the Hispanic market was a huge market that was waiting for, you know, more music to come out and more artists, you know, to come with.
And you guys were
some people
like
don't know.
You guys
but
huge.
Some people don't know the only way Los Marihuanos is the one that's behind Cash Money Brothers and Straight Up Gangsta Shit mixtapes.
Wow.
So all those years, they were the ones pushing those mixtapes and creating them and mixing them before even starting a group, you know, that group themselves.
That's wild. See, I didn't even know
crazy.
That. Because they became, you know what I'm saying, a successful group. But before that, they had those tapes everywhere. I mean, I could go in the convenience store and there's bootlegs of those tapes, you know, in places like Berwyn and Cicero and, you know, all surrounding areas of Chicago. They were everywhere. Swaparama, I mean, shit. Yeah. So if you guys can find those tapes, man, anybody listening, those are some gems, man. Straight up gangster shit. I don't know how many volumes they did, but I think I had 1 through 3, if I'm not mistaken. And they always had badass artwork, you know what I'm saying, that hand-drawn stuff, and you kept it, you know what I'm saying, like that with the Wicked Streets of Shy. You know, you followed in that tradition, you know, with that dope artwork. You know, Chicago, you know what I'm saying? I think Shane has one more question, but I just want to touch on this a little bit. You know, my grandfather, he used to tell me, he remembers when people were cutting turf in the 20s, you know, and wild shit happened, you know, in Chicago, obviously, as we know, Al Capone, the whole bootleg thing. Mm-hmm. But the 90s, man, they weren't no joke either. You know, how did you... You know what I'm saying? Run a label and manage to survive that era, because it was pretty, you know, wicked.
Yeah.
Pardon the pun.
Yeah. Well, you know, first of all, in the beginning, you know, you want to think about, oh, well, we got to go to all these different neighborhoods that are, you know, we're not familiar with, or there's opposition there or whatever it is. But really, yeah, you know, once we started getting into the business, is that we are on a whole nother level on the business. So we network and we coordinate with everybody in all different, you know, sides of the field when you're in the music business. Well, in those days, you know, in those days, it doesn't matter where you're from. We were on a whole nother level together working towards building the music up and the art. It wasn't fighting and killing and shooting each other, you know, battling of, you know, wax battles, you know, stuff like that, trying to shoot each other and kill each other. We were working together, all different, you know, neighborhoods, all different, you know, mobs, all different, you know, members. And we were on just, you know, on a whole nother level, just moving forward. You know, we were on a mission for music, you know. So,
yeah,
you know, we navigated through all different, you know, neighborhoods and all different, you know, streets and all that on a whole nother mission, a whole nother level, you know. And I hate to see some of the things that are happening these days, you know.
Oh, man. Yeah, absolutely. You know, these days, there wasn't no movements like that. Just like on the West Coast, you had We're All the Same Gang and things of that nature. You're bringing people together. And, man, you did that your whole career, man. Everything you put out, you know, when it comes to those projects, you know, the Wicked Streets, all that stuff, you had people from everywhere on there. So salute to you for that. Always positive. Brother Sin, I know you got one more for him, don't you?
Oh, yeah, the last one. Gutenberg may be one of the first Chicago in the day, maybe early 80s.
First Chicago.
Say it one more time.
Like, who was like the first Chicago rapper that you remember?
For Chicago rapper, I remember. I used to love Black AG. It was one of the first cassettes that I bought. I used to hear on Friday nights, I think it was, on GCI, they would play some Chicago music once in a while. They would play a hip-hop mix. And once in a while, they would put some Chicago artists in there. And Black AG was one of my favorite in the beginning. First artist that I started listening to it and attracting to in that time period. And then I would go to George's Music Room on the West Side, which was the number one independent record store in the whole country. Yes, the whole country, George's Music Room. And I would go there and see what they had, and they would have different cassettes of different, you know, underground artists. And that's where I would go and find things and buy things from him. You know, and then eventually when we came out and dropped our own first project, George came and, you know, sat us in his office and tried to lead us in the right direction and make sure we had everything right. He would tell us, oh, you got to have a barcode. You got to have the selection number, a catalog number. Who's your distributor? You got to go talk to this guy. Go talk to this guy so you can distribute your product. Make sure it has shrink wrap. Make sure, you know, this and that, you know, all the different things that you need to have. He was trying to lead us in the right direction, and that's how he molded us to build, you know, you know, our company on the right way, the right way it's supposed to be, not just, you know, as a out-the-trunk type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, he gave you that game, man. That's like George is like St. Charles, E-40's uncle, you know, over there.
Yep.
You know, say with SMG on the West Coast, did the same thing. He used to bring like 8 tracks and fucking 45 records in. That's how far he goes back. But those guys are so vital to the success of hip hop, man. And I don't even know if they realized it, you know, because without them, you know, there'd be a huge void. That's the type of game that cats go to those conferences and pay money for, you know, to hear someone speak. So, man, shout out to George for that, You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And
Pink House,
and,
another one.
And he, yeah, exactly. Pink House was you know, the one pushing the music on the air and the airwaves, you know. And one thing about E-40 and his whole crew is that I built my portion of my distribution off of their model, right? Because I would go to distributors and I would solicit my product to them, and then I would see a little thing that they got from, let's say, a Sickwitted, right? And you'd say, Sickwitted Records, available at Polestar Distribution, available at Southwest Wholesale, available at, I forgot the other one, available at City Hall, available at the other one. So I went and I said, let me copy this whole model. And I would call every one of those. And I said, because that was where our market was. Like, our market wasn't Baker and Taylor, which was distributing to, you know, Rolling Stone. You know, our market was the same market that Sickwitted had. You know what I'm saying? Independent rap, underground rap music. So I followed that model, E40's model for distribution, and I got all those distributors to pick me up from that particular thing.
Wow.
And some of those distributors I'm still with to this day.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's a hell of a relationships you build over the years in this game, you know, that last for a long time. Maybe you were thinking about the other distribution. There was one in Louisiana, Gonzalez. I don't know if I'm sure you remember him.
Yeah, exactly. Gonzalez, yeah. I used Gonzalez before.
Selecto
Hits. The New York region one, I forgot what that one was. It was Music Distributors, MDI, I think it was, something like that.
And they had Navarre up in the Midwest, up in Minnesota, I think.
Part of the State Assassins where we had a chamber, right? Toxic. And he had a group called The Chamber. They were distributed. They had a label that was distributed by Navarre, right? But Navarre wasn't really pushing their stuff. So I said, I don't want one person, I do not want one distributor to have control of how much money I bring in. So that's why I said I got to have at least six distributors in different regions that, you know, will push and bring in, have different checks coming to me in my direction. And on top of that, I'm going to sell directly to the flea markets and these underground stores myself and create my own distribution plan so that I can have money coming in over there, you know, on another angle, instead of just waiting around for distributors to come in and check every 3 months.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you want to have your eggs in more baskets than one. And, you definitely did your thing. Congrats on the 30 years. You know, that's huge. I just celebrated this year's my 25th year, you know, covering hip-hop. So, man, it's a blessing to have that type of longevity doing anything. You know, so, man, definitely congratulations. It's a huge honor for me to early on in my career to be able to review some of the product that you put out. You know, you always put out top-notch quality, you know, dope beats, super dope lyrics. I mean, you guys did your thing, and you're still doing your thing to this day. Catch up with us a little bit on what's going on with Wicked Entertainment in 2023.
Well, yeah, being that it's a 30-year, you know, anniversary, we're going to start our anniversary projects that we have coming down the line, and a couple of remix albums and some stuff that we also pulled out of the vault that we never released. I got a few albums from different artists that have never been released yet. And then, you know, recently we had also re-released this movie called Trust None that featured a lot of the artists from Chicago, EC, Psychodrama and stuff. So, you know, we're working on putting together the part two of Trust None movie and get that produced and filmed. Yep. And that's something that's in our, you know, in our wheelhouse along with a few other compilations and stuff. But I've recently digitized a whole bunch of tapes from back in the days. I still got 200 more tapes to do, but I do like 30 at a time. So I've got enough stuff to do like three different documentaries that I want to put together first. So we're putting those pieces together digitizing the old content, and all this stuff that people haven't seen yet are coming together for a good story and a good documentary. And then I'll start, you know, marketing it through different festivals in the beginning, and then direct to consumer, you know, like we did with Trust None, we brought it direct to consumer as well as DVDs and stuff like that. So, you know, those are some of the things that we're going towards on the digital end. But I still a believer in products. So I still have CDs, I have cassettes, I have vinyl. You know, I try to keep as much as I can in stock. But we believe that, you know, those type of things are still, you know, valuable. So I still have that out there on our digital sites, you know, for sale. And we ship out stuff even through Amazon. We have an Amazon store as well. So basically, you know, we just, you know, we try to keep the fire alive. And, you know, encourage artists to keep moving. And there's a few artists that we like that are newer, younger artists that we want to try to support one way or the other. So, you know, we're working on some things and see what happens from there, you know.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. That's what I'm talking about. You know, the longevity right there is amazing, and we definitely look forward to seeing what you guys come out with in the future. Before we get out of here, man, is there any you know, shout outs or anything you want to give, or, you know, anything else, man? It's all yours.
Well, yeah, of course. You know, shout out to my partner Sinbad. You know, one day maybe you could talk to him and, you know, get into the aspect of things.
Hell yeah.
Me and him we've known each other since grammar school too. Like, we a lot of the guys that we were part of Wicked Entertainment are from grammar school. You know, Frank, my boy Frank, my boy Mac, we all come from grammar school. It's crazy how we're still friends, and we built, you know, we worked towards building something on the same, you know, same mission, you know. And
yeah.
it has a place in our heart, you know, for all of us, you know. And everybody has crazy stories and experiences from this you know, this wicked life.
Yeah, man, you guys been putting it down. Definitely like to talk to you know what I'm saying. What did you say his name was again?
Sinbad,
definitely. Yeah, hell yeah, man. Well, this is an interview I wanted to do for a long time, man. Thank you so much for taking time to do this. And you know what I'm saying, please, man, let's definitely do it again in the future. You know what I'm saying? And for everybody listening, please support, you know what I'm saying, Wicked Entertainment. You know, everything that they drop, man, get behind it, you know. Definitely. Hell of a show, mm-hmm. Hell of a show. Thanks again, brother. I appreciate you.
No doubt. Thanks for having me on. And Sin, nice talking to you too. Out there in France, right?
Thanks.
Hell yeah. Appreciate it. You guys go to France, man. That's the French connection right there, man. He just interviewed Havoc of Mobb Deep for us. You know, he's interviewed Donald D of the Rhyme Syndicate. You name it. So if you ever go overseas, man, definitely hook up with Sin. You know?
No, we've been there before. We've been to I went to Nice, and I went to Cannes, and I would go for a music festival convention over there called Meet Them.
Oh, wow.
You were in Cannes, and which state? Or the state?
I went to Cannes, and I went for Meet 'em a couple years.
Oh.
And
right.
I made some business deals over there, some, you know, connections and stuff like that for a lot of different licensing and stuff like that, distribution overseas.
Sure.
Hell yeah.
Right.
Hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about, man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll definitely get up again. Thanks again, brother. And, Sin, thank you. And we're going to sign off on episode 944, Sleepy Wicked of Wicked Entertainment, Murder Master Music Show. Thank you.
Yes, sir.